Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's September 9th. 57 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City is reporting 58 degrees. And on the phone with a weather update from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Seth Sanders.
Happy Tuesday. I'm ABC4 weather forecaster Seth Sanders. Today's temperatures will be similar to where they were yesterday. We have daytime highs in the upper 70s to low 80s along the Wasatch Back. Park City itself will run at 78 degrees, while the Heber Valley is a few degrees warmer with a daytime high of 83. We do expect a mix of sun and clouds, and we can't rule out the chance of an afternoon and evening shower rolling on through, but otherwise it should be fairly dry. As we get into tomorrow, that wet weather potential starts to increase a little bit. Our Wednesday, we still have partly cloudy skies as that moisture pushes deeper, but we are looking at more isolated showers and thunderstorms over the region, so keep your eyes to the skies. Daytime highs tomorrow will be similar to where they'll be today. 77 degrees is the forecasted high in Park City, so just a degree cooler, and Heber City also running a degree cooler tomorrow than it is today, with a high of 82 degrees. On Thursday, that moisture continues pushing further into the state, bringing even more isolated showers and thunderstorms to the Wasatch Back, mostly in the higher terrain. We do have about a 50% chance of precipitation on the Wasatch Back for your Thursday. We do also have a mix of sun and clouds and much cooler temperatures. 72 degrees will be the high in Park City for your Thursday, while Heber City tops out at 78. As for your Friday, we do have more scattered showers on deck, a 40 to 60% chance of precipitation both in Park City and Heber City, and cooler temperatures still. Park City will have a high on Friday of 68 degrees, while Heber City tops out at 73 degrees. Overnight lows will be in the upper 50s to low 40s through this week, gradually cooling off. As we get into the weekend, that moisture starts to shuffle on out, but there's still a chance that we could see some isolated showers and thunderstorms, especially towards Park City. We do have a mix of sun and clouds, and temperatures still fairly cool. Saturday will be our coolest day with a daytime high of 67 degrees in Park City and 73 for Heber City. By your Sunday, things really start to dry on out. We're looking at clear to mostly clear skies to close out the weekend, and things are going to start to warm back up in the back half of the weekend. 72 for Park City on your Sunday and 78 for Heber City. There is still a slight chance of precipitation as moisture will be lingering, but it's not looking very significant. And as we get into Monday, we have another system that's going to be approaching us to our west that could throw a little moisture our way. So expect mostly sunny skies, but we can't rule out the chance of more precipitation to kick off next week. We'll keep you posted. From ABC4, I'm weather forecaster Seth Sanders. Have a great day.
Summit County looking to engage the community through a variety of ways. And in the studio with details is Summit County Communication and Public Engagement Director, Derek Sitaway. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning, Leslie.
So it sounds like you have been collecting resident input for a bit. Maybe explain what your goal was in trying to create new ways to communicate with county residents.
Mm-hmm. So we're constantly looking to refine and evaluate the ways that we communicate with residents, both during day-to-day operations and during emergency operations. So one thing we did earlier this spring, we've started working with a new service called Flash Vote, which is kind of like you could describe it as maybe micro surveys that go out to the community. And those go out to a group of panelists that Flash Vote gathers from our community, and then the community in general can respond to those surveys. We send the link out when we do one. So the first survey we did was just a kind of a communication preferences survey to get a new pulse or a current pulse on how the community wants to receive information from that. And we asked a series of questions about where they get information, what types of information they like to receive from us, and took that and then combined it with some work we did with the Summit County Sheriff's Office to really reevaluate and kind of update some of our processes, not only around emergency notifications for wildfires and situations like that, but also just looking at how we talk to residents on a day-to-day basis or a week-to-week basis to make sure that all the information that we have that residents need to know or may be interested in, that they're getting that in a timely fashion and they're getting it straight from the source from us.
Yeah, so what are the community's preferences then? I mean, where do they want to see this and you know, what types of messages do they want to hear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our top channels or platforms that residents said they prefer to get information from, one was local media, so we definitely appreciate radio, local paper, that was high on the list. And then we had social media as well, and then the county website, but the one that really surprised us or was encouraging to see was our email newsletter. And that was ranked about as high as the other three options. And then we asked a follow-up question. So the first question was, where do you get information? And then the next question was, where do you want to get information? And kind of the surprise there, or just the good information we got from that, was that residents were interested in text or SMS messaging and also more email communications. So that's been something that we've been looking at expanding. We already had those platforms in place. But looking to see how we can do more of that without getting to the point where we don't want to be texting people all the time, because that's still kind of a, you know, the one sacred thing we have left, right? Our email inboxes are flooded, so we're working on how we can do more of that, but also still respecting people's time and space and not just constantly buzzing them with things on their phones.
Right, so you save the text messaging for the most important stuff, and that would be what, a road closure, traffic accident, wildfire?
Yeah, those are all great examples. Obviously, during an emergency situation, that's a little bit different on the amount of texts or just notices that we would send out. But in addition to that, we've done a number of kind of keywords that you can text in for us. One is just the general Summit County, and that'll get you just general news that you can text in. We also have one we've set up for Public Works, one for the Health Department, and we moved our SC Fire line to this new service too. So that's not just during emergencies, but that will give you like red flag warnings or just fire conditions and outlooks too.
I thought I just signed up for like one number, but did I check a box that said I want all of that information?
No, there's different keywords for each, and we kind of advertise and market those each in different ways, just because we didn't want to do a single number and then flood people with information they necessarily didn't want by phone. We recognize that some people would like to hear about fires via text, even if it's not directly impacting them. Whereas, you know, maybe our mobile vaccine clinics, people may want to get notifications for those via text, but some people may not. So we've kind of set up a menu of ways that you can hear from us and be notified on those things, depending on what your preferences are and kind of what your priorities are.
Yeah, so like trash pickup, I want to know if my trash is getting picked up on the regularly scheduled day. Is there something for that too?
Yes, on the website we do have a category for service delays that we've listed there that you can find. And all of this I should mention is at summitcountyutah.gov/engage. You can find all of our social links, all of the different text keywords we have, the different apps we use, and also just how to sign up for emergency and non-emergency notifications.
With those specific keywords.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, any idea how many people of the county have registered for those text alerts?
Mm-hmm. I believe on the Summit County line, we have over 900 individuals. We launched this about 10 months ago, so we're encouraged with that. The other benefit of this with the service that we use for the texting was, and we announced this last December when it came out, but anyone that had a phone number registered with the post office was added into a database, so we could actually send geo-targeted texts as well. And we save those for things like, you know, if we had a water outage or a boil order, things like that. So we're not really using those targeted messages as frequently, but we do have the option available too, even if, say, for some reason the Camas Library had a surprise closure for some reason. We could let people know in the Camas Valley area that, hey, the library is going to be closed today, but we're careful how we use those. Again, respecting people's time and space, and also wanting to make sure we don't kind of spend that cachet, I guess you could say, before we need to.
Okay. Now, the Beulah Fire, I guess, gave you an opportunity to kind of test out all of this. How did that go?
Yeah, it went really well. Specific with wildfire, like I mentioned earlier, we met with the Summit County Sheriff's Office and sat down as our two communications teams and really evaluated how we communicate about wildfires. Because we're, as the county, we're in kind of a unique position where if it's a small fire, we're the one that's going to be talking about it. But if it grows larger to what's called a type 3 fire or larger, or type 2 or type 1, then you have either a state or a regional team coming in. But we want to make sure that in any disaster that residents are hearing from us throughout the process. We just don't want to hand the keys over and then kind of take them back after. So we work closely with those operators and those public information officers to make sure we have the most current information. And specific to some of the work we did, we set up a kind of a landing page called, it's at summitcounty.info/fire, and that's where you can sign up for everything that's fire related. Again, that links at the other place. We kind of make it simple, one-stop shop to find stuff, but that's where you can sign up for text alerts, where you can make sure that you've signed up for emergency alerts, and just links to where we post about these incidents on our website. And that's something that we've improved and taken away from the Parley's Canyon Fire, is making more information accessible on our website and not just on these other social channels, so that people kind of have a one-stop shop, whether they're directly impacted or just curious to know more about a fire or other emergency incident.
And certainly what the Parley's Fire showed us was that we didn't have all of this emergency information out to our Spanish-speaking constituents, which you have kind of remedied mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, we did a bunch of work in 2021 and 2022 specific around emergency notifications. Last year, we were able to work with Summit County Dispatch to go in and have pre-translated templates for all of the emergencies that we have English versions in. So that was a big move that we did with the Summit County Sheriff's Office. And then last year, with a grant we received, we also did some additional work to kind of launch an experimental WhatsApp channel that's dedicated to our Spanish-speaking community. And we'll talk about emergency situations there. We'll also talk about road closures, winter weather, things like that, and then also day-to-day stuff. So that's really a one-stop location. And that was based on information we received from the community, where we had tried to do direct-to-text, and what we found out was that WhatsApp is kind of a preferred communication channel for that, for a variety of reasons. So we really leaned into that, like I said, in the last 10 months or so, and have been building that as well along with these other platforms.
The worst part about giving out a cell number or answering a survey is just the data that we're giving out. How is that protected so that we're not getting, you know, texts from China?
For sure, yeah. Well, I will say up front that the county does not sell your data to anyone, let alone people, shady operators outside the country. Specific with FlashVote, the survey service I mentioned earlier, we don't get any of the personal information that you give to FlashVote when you sign up. So they keep all of it. They don't sell it. They safeguard it. We don't have access to it, so we can't say, give us the email address or phone number of everyone in your system. They're not going to give us that. And then related to our platform specifically that we collect information from, the county has a privacy policy in place that you can find more information about. We're very careful about how we use residents' information. And also, I think it's important to note that the different ways that you give information to the county, we don't just kind of put it all in one pool and share it around. So if you give it to one department or an elected office for something, I, as the communication director, am not taking that to say, hey, I'm going to add you to our email list. We are very much an opt-in and let us know that you want to hear from us in this way organization, rather than just kind of assuming and throwing everything into the communication pot.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know?
No, just again, if you're interested in learning more about any of these communication services or signing up for any of these notifications, you can do that at summitcountyutah.gov/engage.
Okay, Derek Sitaway, Summit County Communications Director. Thanks so much for your time. The South Summit Board of Education met last night, and on the phone with an update, I have the Superintendent of Schools, Greg Wong. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. So how is the first month of school going?
Well, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but it seems to be going pretty well. So it's always great to get kids back in buildings and teachers back in buildings. That's when they come alive.
Okay. And the final enrollment numbers don't have to be reported until October 1, but what are you seeing in terms of enrollment, and especially compared to a year ago?
We'll be down a little bit, which, you know, is, I think, a trend across across the state in a lot of districts, but how many will be down is obviously still remains to be seen, but we'll be in the high 1500s, which is not too far from where we were last year.
Okay. And so you're also then on par with what your business administrator budgeted. You're going to be okay financially.
Yeah. I think we'll be okay.
All right. And what about teachers? Did you need to find many teachers this year, how difficult was that?
We actually did not need to hire very many teachers this year. A couple years ago, our board, through their strategic plan, made it a goal to increase salaries and things, and I think that helped a lot. You know, we've been looking at possibly doing some affordable housing, things like that, and the feedback we got was, you know, focus on salaries first, and ever since then, it seems that we our hiring is decreased some, and the quantity of applicants has gone up. So it was a great hiring season. We hired some great people, but thankfully we didn't have to replace very many teachers.
So did staff get a raise this school year?
They did. The biggest raise came a couple years ago, we had done a truth in taxation that year. We did not do one this year and didn't do one last year, everybody got a cost of living increase.
Okay, what are we talking about? How much?
It was 4%.
Nice, okay.
So, yeah.
All right, taking a look at last night's agenda, you presented results of third grade reading scores. Where do these figures come from?
Well, they come from the state. Every third grade student is given a reading assessment. It's an indicator of you know, how well they're reading and potential issues that they may have with reading, called the Acadience. And so every third grader takes it. And our third graders this last year did very well. We tied for, out of the 41 public school districts, we tied for third with Morgan. And out of the 131 districts and charters, we were 16th. So we were pleased with that.
Okay, and that's interesting. I'm glad you say that you're pleased with that, because when I look at the numbers, I'm a little concerned, because it showed, this is statewide that we're talking about, 48.7% of third graders are reading at grade level. And that's an increase by of about 0.5% from a year ago. But I'm so surprised that the statewide percentage isn't even half. Why not?
Well, you know, so if there's an interesting thing that happens right there around third grade. You know, up to that point, kids are trying to learn to read. And then there's a shift right there around third grade where instead of learning to read, they actually have to start reading to learn. And so if you can imagine, you know, having to pick up more of that academic language that first time, that first go around, can be difficult for some students. But it's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why the state is really pushing the science of reading as a requirement to be considered and part of all of the curriculum that we use in our elementary literacy curriculum. And so as an educator and as a parent and now as a grandparent, even, it's like, yeah, we want that up. We want to get that up. Ideally, we want to have every kid reading on grade level by the time they're in third grade. It's a good predictor of how well students or how, you know, maybe not as much how well, but how much easier it'll be for students later in school to be able to do.
So I'm just going to throw out the numbers that I read in the report. Wasatch School District reports 45% of their third graders reading at grade level. North Summit at 57%. Park City has 69%, so more than two-thirds of their students. South Summit third graders at almost 62%. So how can these numbers be improved? I mean, what are we doing for the other third students who aren't at grade level?
Well, a primary focus is, first, really high-quality Tier 1 instruction, which is just the instruction that all students get in the classroom. And then from there, moving on to knowing where those holes are with students, where those gaps are, and then targeting some of your Tier 1 instruction to that, but also following up with an additional tier of intervention with a teacher to start, you know, to really try to fill those holes. And I would say that's a big part of what helps get us to where we were at in this last round of assessment. So, teachers are working their tails off and just doing a good job, and so it really does come down to that really high quality instruction and the high quality follow up with intervention when needed.
Okay, and you know what you're saying, the teachers are doing a good job. Let's let parents know that they can really improve the situation as well by reading to their kids. Yeah,
that's right. You know, one of the things that I even as an educator, I was a secondary teacher, and thankfully my wife knew more about it than I did. When we started having kids, she really made it a focus to read to our kids. And that is one of the best things that a parent can do, is read to their kids. And then as the kids are learning how to read, to shift some of that responsibility to have their kids read to them. You know, there's a strong correlation between academic language and just even basic language. The more words kids are exposed to, generally the better readers they are, and actually the better they perform. And not just on state tests, but just in general, they pick it up easier. So the parents really are huge. They have a huge impact on their students' success in school.
Okay. School district also conducted what's called a 504 internal audit. What is it, and what did you find?
So 504 is section 504 is something that falls under the Individuals with Disability Education Act. And so we just, you know, it's a good practice to do audits, and I reported on that because I wanted the board to know that we frequently look at how we're doing in things, and thankfully in our internal audit we didn't find anything egregious, nothing bad, but some things that stuck out to us that we want to fix are consistency between buildings, you know, whether it's verbiage or whether it's, you know, small differences to how we're approaching eligibility, things like that. We just want to tighten that system up. And so we've got a training coming up in a couple days for all of our administrators and those who are writing those 504 plans. Like I said, just to tighten up our system.
Yeah. Now, are those audit results released to the state? I mean, is that something that you have to meet a threshold with?
No. Oh, it's just quality control internally. We do go through audits with the state for things like IEPs. For the 504s, we don't, but that's why it's a good practice to look at those internally.
Okay. Greg, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I appreciate you having me on.
Okay. We'll talk to you next month. Thank you.
Thanks. See you. Bye-bye.
Greg Mann is the superintendent of schools for South Summit School District. You're listening to the Local News Hour at KPCW.